What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another exciting episode of Screencast. I'll be your host, Nick Scarpino, alongside the Nitro Rifle himself, Andy Cortez.
Great morning, viewers and listeners.
The master of the ones and twos, Kevin Coelho.
It's a good day, guys. It's a good day.
Today, of course, we are talking about Dune. We're going to be reviewing that movie. But before we do, I want to remind you guys, hey, if you want to support this show, you can do so in a couple different ways. Did you know this is actually a podcast? We put this out on podcast services. And if you guys want, it would be really awesome if you went over there and subscribed to our podcast services and gave us a little good rating. And if you got a couple extra bucks to give, go over to patreon.com/kindoffunny. Throw us a couple bucks. You get all this podcast ad free. And for some of our podcasts, you get access to our exclusive post show where we talk about what we really feel about Greg Miller. Today we're talking about Dune, directed by Denis Villeneuve, who has also directed a lot of movies like Blade Runner, 2049, Sicario, and Arrival. These are all bangers. And you're starting to see, what I like is, I want to get into the visuals here.
Fine.
I'm like, all these movies feel like they belong together, and I like that very much. And it also stars Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya and Rebecca Ferguson, alongside a host of other amazing actors that cast this bad boy. So let's kick it off. Andy, you saw this a week ago. What did you think?
I did. I enjoyed it a lot. I think it is...
Three impressions for like maybe 5 minutes.
Sure, yeah. I enjoyed it a lot. I think it's a very heady movie. I think it is very unconventional in the way that it's shown to the viewer. And I think a lot of that is because of the possibilities of the trilogy. And it looks like it starts off with Dune Part 1, so obviously, that's what they're going for. I say possibilities just in case, because we don't know about the funding. And I think Tim said that there was some funding that was kind of.
I believe they're already a go for the next part of Dune.
Well, fantastic.
I think for sure we're getting the Benny Jesuit show. And then part two is dependent on how well it does on HBO Max, not just necessarily how well it does in theaters. I think it's still on the fence.
All right. God, how terrible it would be if they were like, well, can't do part two.
It starts off with part one, what we could have had. Yeah, I think this movie reminds me of a lot of, every once in a while, I'll come across a TikTok video where a musician says, guess what time signature I'm playing in? This movie, you could have done that with, like, guess what act we're in? Because it's crescendoing when you don't feel like it should, and it's going into, like, long monologues at moments where you don't feel like, where are we at in this movie? Oh, there's still an hour left. It's very unconventional in that way. But I still really, really enjoyed it. I love the visuals. I wasn't a massive fan of Timothée Chalamet's performance in this movie. But I think Rebecca Ferguson was fantastic. I think a lot of these sort of ancillary characters, Oscar Isaac, I love his portrayal as well. I think this movie is awesome. I think Denis Villeneuve hit it out of the park once again. I hope we get to see part two.
Kevin, what did you think?
I forgot about no spoilers. I almost went spoilery there.
Yeah, no spoilers yet. Nice. We'll go into spoilers in a second.
So I'm a really, really, really big Dune fan. Specifically, I grew up watching the sci-fi series, which I think is phenomenal. So I'm very much invested in this world. Like, I've watched countless, like, legitimately 40-minute videos that break down, like, Dune lore. I've never read the books because, you know, reading's for nerds. But, like, so I really, really, really am invested, and I love this movie. Like, I enjoyed. Do I think that it's extremely ambitious with how hard it goes and how fast? Now, that being said, it is a slow movie. But when I say it goes fast, is it like, it's just like you're suddenly in the middle of the world and they don't explain a lot of things that are happening. It's just like it starts and it's like, it's the year 11,000 and you're like, what is it?
In our lifetime is this a different lifetime?
So it's really wild, and I really hope the show does well. And I will be watching this on my HBO Max account maybe a couple of times. Like, I left the movie theater and I got home and Paula didn't go. But she was like, you want to watch something? And I was like, we could watch Dune. And she was like, not right now. And I'm like, that's a good choice. But like, I was
100%.
I was 100% ready to start. The biggest issue I think that Dune has is that this is, out of all of the stories, like, this is definitely the slowest part, I'd say. So it's a lot of like exposition, but not like of the world, just of the characters. So it's but I really liked it. I mean, it's so beautiful. There were so many times where it was just like they cut to a random vista where something's just happening, and then they cut back, and it was just like that was 100% unnecessary, but I really liked it.
Wish I could have seen it in IMAX. I regret it.
It was amazing in IMAX, and I don't know if it's on HBO Max or not. If they actually play with the resolution as well, but yeah, in IMAX it goes full screen for a lot of the stuff on Arrakis, and then it goes back to like a more traditional frame for when we're sort of like in the intimate moments with the families.
When we were watching it yesterday or afterwards, Tim and like you and Tim were talking about it cutting back and forth. And I think Tim, maybe it was you that were saying like,
I think Tim said it was distracting. Yeah. I like it. I thought it was a good use of it. It didn't take me out of it at all.
But I think that they should just do everything in IMAX. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a choice, right? I think that when I was watching it, I was, when it did sort of occur to me, I think they used it as a visual choice, because I think a lot of the stuff they wanted to show, especially with the Fremen and a lot of the stuff like the vistas on Arrakis, when they get there, they go to full frame. And I think you're supposed to, as an audience member, feel like, oh, this is liberating, this is freeing, this is where all of this like revolution is going to happen. And then when we go back indoors, when we go behind the shield wall and we go behind all the stuff, and we see all that the amazing architecture of like when the Atreides family that comes from. By the way, I love the differences of like they come from this water planet and they come from this lush, Caledon, green, almost Scottish plains, and they have like the, you know, the Scottish bagpipes that are playing and stuff. When they come to this desert planet, they are such a, and no pun intended, a fish out of water. And then they close the frame off and they make it feel a lot more claustrophobic, and they make a lot of stuff like shot like really close up with them versus the vistas of the outside when we see the worms and stuff like that. It's really cool. So that didn't bother me at all. I think the movie's beautifully shot. I think this is a really good. I did read the books, but I have to be honest with you guys. I read the books like 15 years ago. So you could tell me that there's other characters that introduced. I'd be like, cool, I don't remember.
How many of the books did you read?
Just the first one. I bought Dune Messiah, and it sat on my printer for about a year, and I'm like, I'm not gonna get around to reading
Dune
this.
Messiah. It's wild.
D threw it out the window.
No, she actually put it down. She put it downstairs in my building for people. She just put free. And I think someone else took it. I liked this movie a lot. I think it's a really beautiful and faithful reproduction of what I remember the book being. And I think Denis Villeneuve, I think the whole cast, I think of the way it was shot, I love every part of it. I do worry that people are going to find this boring when they go into it. And for all the reasons that Kevin has described, right, this is a huge amount of setup. It's a huge amount of world build, not even world building, universe building. And so I think, like, you know, talking to Gia when she came out, I was like, what did you catch from that? And she goes, well, I understand the plot, right? This family, this house comes to Arrakis, and there's some political intrigue. I'm like, but did you get all of the political intrigue that was supposed to be happening between like the dynamic between the House Atreides, the House Harkanian, and then and the Emperor? And she was like, I don't know what any of that stuff is. I think it's difficult, because when you're reading the book, you're sitting there and there's chapters telling you what the Bene Gesserit is. There's chapters talking about the setup of all these houses in this universe and all the politics. And it's very, very similar to Game of Thrones, where like with Game of Thrones, We had episodes and episodes and episodes that we spent with these other houses, right? We had like and so you got to learn these characters and learn what the world was. In this one, they have maybe 15 minutes before they're like, or 20 minutes for like, we got to get the Paul to Arrakis. Annie from Kind of Funny.
And I just like Game of Thrones, this movie is I love nerdy shit. I love, you know, it's one reason why I kind of was so drawn to Gundam in my early days. Like, I don't know what the fuck is going on politically here, but it's cool that a cartoon can have this amount of like stuff happening in the background. And I love that sort of shit. I'm a nerd. I am happy that I rewatched about, honestly, up until the very, very last remaining minutes of it on HBO Max, because those subtitles saved me quite a bit, just like they did in Game of Thrones, because they are throwing a lot of names at you. They're throwing a lot of terms and
they're
stuff
not
that
holding your hand. Right. There's no character in this movie that goes, hey, everyone, this is what this is. They're just talking. And you're like, oh, I got it. It's like being thrown into like a level 2 Spanish class where I'm like, oh, shit, I should have read the book. I don't know what's happening here. But I like that, too. And I think that's a kind of a hallmark of Denis Villeneuve, right, where he doesn't really he kind of assumes that that the audience is not dumb, right, or that you're going to like this material and potentially like that you're paying attention, similar to like kind of what a lot of people think like about like a Nolan movie, right, where we're dealing with complex things and we're dealing with a lot of like a lot of stuff that you're throwing at the audience, but you sort of expect the audience to keep up and pay attention, which every once in a while is nice.
I will say though that it becomes less of a are you listening, more of it can, are you hearing this, because this movie had a mixing problem for me, and it could have been that
it did,
I
unfortunately
in my situation I had to sit pretty far back in the theater, meaning that I was further away from the center speakers with the dialogue, and there are a lot of Nolan-esque mixing moments where the sound effects and the score are really overwhelming and the dialogue can kind of get drowned out a bit. And when it's dialogue that is dealing with words and phrases that you have no familiarity with, right. It makes it even tougher.
It is tough.
And just to be clear, a lot of those words are not words other than in this book or a derivative, like it came from this book, like that right. they use. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I still want to know what those are. So I loved watching HBO Max and seeing them spelled out, and that helps me make that mental connection with that word a lot better. And yeah. I had a good time rewatching it. Like I really like this movie, and I think that's a testament to how the high quality of the film, because a 2-hour and 48-minute slow burn, very unconventionally filmed and kind of plotted out. And I think that, like, the fact that I could have still sat there and enjoy it with my, you know, ADHD brain, it's like, it's a really good movie. I really enjoyed it.
I agree. And I hope that people get, I'll wrap up my thoughts and then we'll go into spoiler talk. I agree. I hope people go see this in the movie theaters, and I hope you watch it as well on HBO Max, because it is a beautiful film. It is very much a movie where you have to have patience with spoilers. It's actually probably, I think, even less accessible than Blade Runner 2049, which was a movie that was very, very, I would say, methodical. I'm not going to say slow, but I would say it's very, very purposefully paced the way it was. This movie is like that. I do feel like some of the action was kind of shoehorned in, because they were like, we should have some action here. Because I don't remember the book, I don't remember that much action happening in the first, like, the first act of the story. But it's definitely worth watching. Would we all agree, go see it in theaters and then also go watch it on HBO Max?
100%. And then
see it in IMAX if possible.
If you can, IMAX for sure.
It looks beautiful.
Okay. That is it for our spoiler-free talk. Everyone, Kevin, put up Spoiler Bros, please, on the screen right now.
Thank you.
Perfect. Let's talk about some of the things in this movie. So if you guys don't want the spoiler, obviously turn this off. Make sure you go subscribe.
They know.
To everything. Y'all know. You've been here before with us. I'm really worried that people are going to go, that was boring. Right. That was too much. Like they're going to get lost, because like when you have multiple words in multiple languages that mean the same thing and none of those languages are real languages, you're like, this is very confusing for people. It's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
It's a lot to expect out of a modern audience.
Mike hit me up while we were watching. I got a text from Mike. It just said, watching June on my phone. It's lit. So
yeah, Mike fell asleep 5 minutes. I guarantee he fell asleep.
No. So today, well, I mean, I feel like Mike's pretty honest about falling asleep. But today, when we were doing, before we did our morning meeting, I was talking to Mike for a little bit, and he was like, I really like Dune. And I was like, do you know what's going on? He's like, it looks beautiful, and it's cool. It's like, yeah, all right.
I think a thing that might be the saving grace is that cliffhanger. I think for anybody who might have felt out, but then you kind of fall back into the heat of the battle, and Nick looks like he's slacking Mike right now to come into the voice chat.
he's on a stream.
But I think that final fight scene is interesting enough, and it has enough stakes, and you kind of understand what's happening, and you know that this is going to be the moment where the Fremen accept Paul, and we see, I got chills. I mean, I get chills of the moment when it's like sand power. Like Homegirl puts the thumper down, I'm thinking, is she committing suicide so the worm can eat her? What's going on here? And then you see
the claws come
out. Then
you see her
little like daggers or whatever.
Hooks.
And then later on, we see the hooks of the people riding. And it's like, that's what the thumpers are for. They're calling them to ride them. That's sand power. And then like, this is just
the
beginning.
Desert power, yeah.
The desert power, yeah. The fucking music crescendos. It's like, goddamn, I want to watch part two. This is high.
I'm a little disappointed with that. I was a little disappointed with that moment. Because there's a couple different moments in Dune that are like, holy shit. When you get to them in the book, you're like, wait, they fucking ride these things? And it's like, they make a really big deal out of it being kind of a rite of passage for like only, I think if I'm not mistaken, only certain people can do it. And you have to be able to like kind of have a kindred community, like vibe with the
worms. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people get killed.
The worms, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's also, of course, the bigger reveal that we won't spoil with some of the other stuff. But that moment, I was like, oh, man, I really wish we were in that moment longer, because it did feel like a little bit of a cliffhanger, but it felt kind of rushed.
Oh, really? I don't know. It was perfect for me. Was somebody cool? who knows nothing about the source material, okay, to see the person writing and go, oh, fuck. I didn't know that. Well, that's a thing that, like, they were alluding to it, and they did a good enough job hinting that people can ride these things, and now it all makes sense, and fantastic job framing all of that.
Yeah, I think that I really like that it, like, set it up to be like, oh, shit. For the people that know, when she pulls out those hooks, I'm like, oh, shit, she's going to ride this
thing.
Yeah,
that was cool.
And then she gets stabbed. Like, I don't remember her writing. Yeah, because I was like, you know, it's kind of a bummer that, like, the first time we see it ride, it's this, like, not this character we care about too much. And then she dies. Then I thought it was a little weird then that they show it happening kind of in the distance. And it's like, oh, that would have been a much bigger moment, I think, if we had seen it in the next movie, or
right,
if they had just shown, like,
or if
them
we see two people
on,
riding them.
Yeah.
Like frolicking. Like a tandem jet ski.
Yeah. Yes. Now, one thing that I was disappointed is where this ends. I was hoping we'd get another 20 to 30 minutes more where they, like,
spoilers,
where they go into the cities.
Yeah, where they, like, some things happen that I think make way more sense as a logical, like, stopping point. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't, man, I'm so excited for
the, I think this gets the audience hyped. I think it reminds me a lot of the end of Fellowship of the Ring. Let's go hunt some orc. And the
this
movie
is
ends
it,
there.
Andy,
like, fuck,
and
yeah.
We walked out and I was like, this reminds me a lot of, like, of that first Lord of the Rings movies. And that's what scares me a little bit, right? Because Lord of the Rings has such a diehard following that people were going to come out to support the second one no matter what. In this one, I'm like, I hope this is enough for people to hang on for a second one. I really do. But given the track record of, you know, the last, like, when Blade Runner came out, we were like, oh, cool, it's based on source material that everyone loves. I think Dune has a bigger audience. But when it came out, I was like, this is not a very accessible movie, and there's not a lot of action in this, and it's a thinker. This is kind of some it's a
heady
thinker,
yeah,
and it's heady, and Dune is more of all of that.
One note, Nick, Blade Runner, I don't think, was based off any, like, Blade Runner 2049 was not based off anything.
Well, it was based off the original Blade Runner.
No. I mean, that's...
It was a sequel to Blade Runner.
It's Kevin saying there's
in
no
that
source
world,
material.
There's no
it
source material.
No, it wasn't based on a book. What I'm saying is, in the 80s, a movie called Blade Runner came out and people liked it. And so that had an audience built in that people wanted to see it. Dune has hopefully a bigger audience that'll like, but I don't know if it's as big an audience as the Rings books or Lord of the Rings books. My hope is that people see this and go, hey, everyone, like, if you watch this and you're watching this review and your friends are like, I don't know if I'm going to go see that, tell them to go see it and tell them, hey, it's going to get a lot crazier in part
tell
two.
Tell them Nick sent you.
You got to just stay through. You know, you got to keep going with this. But I worry that, like, our friends who don't really care about sci-fi, like, you have to really care about deep sci-fi on this. And this is one of the situations where I was talking to my wife before, like last week, and she's like, should I come see it? I'm like, well, you should. You should come see it with us, but it is I know what this is going to be. It is going to be 3 hours of Oscar Isaac and Rebecca Ferguson really digging into this heady sci-fi. And if you're not into that concept, then this is going to turn off a lot of people.
But I think that I really do think that we need to push the Game of Thrones narrative. I think of the amount of people who would have never given a single shit about not only a political show, but I meant to say, like, think about the amount of people that never gave a shit about fantasy and said, ugh, dragons, I don't want to fucking watch that.
Well, that was me.
But it becomes a very sort of, you know, you get it's wrapped into this story with all the sort of feuds happening between all the houses and stuff. And I think that whenever I see the trailers pop up and it's like, the review from so-and-so, and it's, this is the next Game of Thrones. I'm like, that sounds like kind of cheesy, but it's like, right. No, they I think they nailed it. Like, especially just calling it, like, the House Harkonnen, House Atreides, that should just make sense. And it's a story about imperialism. I think it's just like really cool.
This episode is brought to you by Uncommon Goods. If you're on a mission to be the best gift giver ever, this season, it's never too early to start looking. No matter who you're shopping for, Uncommon Goods is the place to find remarkable and truly original gifts for anyone. Some of the cool things I got recently were those baseball park map pint glasses that I got for one of my good friends, James Burke. He doesn't know it's coming yet, but he is going to absolutely love the Oracle Park one. And also Gia got this puzzle that is really cool. Puzzles are always a fun thing, right? Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade. They have the most meaningful, out of the ordinary gifts anywhere. And with every purchase you make, Uncommon Goods gives $1 back to a nonprofit partner of your choice. So make your holiday season stress-free. Check out their selection of thousands of items. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/kindoffunny. That's uncommongoods.com/kindoffunny for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. uncommongoods.com/kindoffunny. We're all out of the ordinary. Next up, shout out to MeUndies. Are you afraid of the glow in the dark? Well, shield your eyes, because the new MeUndies Halloween just dropped dead. If there's one collection you don't want a ghost, it's this one. I always love MeUndies. I always love their themed collections, and I especially love when they get fun, like with the Halloween ones. We're glowing in the dark, baby. MeUndies are made from natural fibers sourced from beechwood trees, making their micromodal fabric soft, breathable, and dangerously cozy. And I can attest to all of that. Of course, even right now, wearing my MeUndies shirt, my lounge pants, my undies, and socks. I love the micromodal fabric all over my body. It is so soft, and I love being a big, soft boy. You can get your spooky season up and haunting with 5 new prints. I See You, My Boo, Tricks and Treats, Lazy Bones, and Lazy Pumpkin. MeUndies has a great offer for you first-time purchasers out there. You can get 15% off and free shipping. To get 50% off your first order, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. And finally, shout out to HelloFresh. Spooky season is also extra busy season, but one thing you can take off your plate is meal planning and grocery shopping, because HelloFresh is here to keep you stocked and chopped. They deliver pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering recipes directly to you. We're talking fresh, going from the farm to your door within a week, so you get the convenience without the sacrifice in quality. HelloFresh offers fantastic variety with over 50 menu and market items to choose from every week, including vegetarian, so it works great for Paula and Kevin, calorie smart, and even gourmet options. And they're bringing out all the fall options too, like one pot broccoli mac and cheese to make weeknight meals super easy. That sounds fantastic, and I really, really hope that I get to try that one. Cool Greg's been using HelloFresh. Blessing's been using HelloFresh. Kind of Funny is a HelloFresh family. Go to HelloFresh.com/morning14 and use code morning14 for up to 14 free meals, including free shipping. That's up to 14 free meals, including free shipping, at HelloFresh.com/morning14. Use code morning14.
And by the way, calling it the next Game of Thrones, obviously, Kevin knows, is a little bit of a misnomer. We should call this the first Game of Thrones, because this book came out before that. And I'm pretty sure it was a heavily influenced when George R.R. Martin decided to write Game of Thrones. But I wish, there's a couple things that I don't like about this movie. One is that I love Denis Villeneuve's overall, like, top level visual style for all of his movies. And he has a very, very distinctive, like, visual look that he goes for that I think you can see when you go, like, the ships in Arrival look kind of like the ships in here and the big worm tubes and all that stuff. I love all the tech in this. I love that it kind of feels like a lot of the sharper edges of the armor and stuff ties into some of the visuals we saw in Blade Runner. I'm not saying any of these movies have to do with each other. I'm just saying visually, Denis Villeneuve, I love his style, but I think he pushed it a little too far in this. And visually on screen, when there was fighting happening, I'm like, I don't know who's fighting whom. And I think it would have helped a little bit to be a little bit more accessible if the houses visually had, like, and colors, this is going to sound schemes. Stupid, a color, a different look and a different vibe and a different color to them. Because when we keep cutting back and forth to, like, they introduce that other, like the Unsullied, basically, which is I forget what they were called.
Sadakar, this, but spoilers. Or something like that.
Yeah, they're the Unsullied.
They're just the PMCs. They're the PMCs.
Yeah. and they have a white outfit, and then everyone else is fighting in white outfits, and then Duncan Idaho runs in a white outfit. I'm like, I understand who's who because I'm paying attention, But I do think that it would have been nice. One of the things that was great about Game of Thrones is like we saw the flags, we saw the wolf, we saw the color schemes. We knew when we were in King's Landing visually that we're like, oh, it's summertime down there. It's winter up there. And
red is Gryffindor.
Exactly. And I hate to say, but I feel like a touch of color in here would have gone a long way for that, for just having a little bit more like distinguishment between the house, especially when like it gets a little confusing toward the end when the Baron's sitting in the big dining room of the Atreides house on Arrakis. And I'm like, oh, where are they? And then we see the bull up there. I'm like, oh shit, they're in that room. Because everything's so sparse. There's like no set dressing in anything. Mm-hmm. So when you cut back and forth between all the planets, it's a lot of it looks very visually similar. Like
I agree.
Yeah. So but I do love everything they did with the Harkonnens. Oh yeah.
I wish we'd gotten a little bit more. Like watching Batista like beat someone to death like they did in the sci-fi show, where like just to show how like strong, and this is just what they do for fun is murder each other, would have been cool. But
do you guys ever remember the original movie that Fincher did? There was a moment in it where like he had installed, I don't think it was in the source material, but there was a thing that he had installed in all of his slaves where it was like a heart plug that if you just pulled it, you'd bleed out. It was like super twisted.
Oh no!
Mean David Lynch, not Fincher.
Sorry, David Lynch. But yeah, overall, other than that, I don't really have a ton. I feel like a little bit of the action was shoehorned in there, where they were like, "We need to have these big action set pieces." And I think that's just because they needed something cool to show in the trailers, because otherwise it would have been a lot of talking in this. I don't hate that, but I remember in the books, I'm like, the action in the books were not the things that I remember. The things that I remember a lot in the books is the setup for the Freeman, the setup for him being the Mahdi or whatever the chosen one's going to be. And the notion that there's this clan of the Bene Gesserit who have been through centuries breeding lines of people to find this one person that has this extraordinary ability that we don't even know what it's supposed to be yet. That is such a cool, heady concept. But when says like our plans take centuries, I'm like, oh, it's such a cool thing to say.
It's so great. And I got so many vibes from Arrival and all the time jumps and the visual sort of I'm seeing into the future moments that you don't know. Or is that in the past? You think it's something in the past? And I love every moment when it is hinted that Paul has seen this, when he shows up in his suit and she's like, who told you to do the cufflinks like that at the bottom? And he said, I just felt like the right way to do it. She's like, nobody. And then she says, like,
he'll know our
he
ways.
Will present
like he was born here.
Yeah. Like every moment like that, I think is so well done. And it just gets me hyped for whenever in movies there is the one, similar to like in Mass Effect when you are the Spectre. Like Neo, all those moments are Matrix. So badass, dude.
I kind of felt like it was a lot more force than I ever heard it before, though. Like in anything that I've seen before, the mom isn't like was trying to create you. It's usually the mom was like she's not married to the guy, but like the Duke wanted a boy, she's like
she loved him.
I wasn't supposed to, but I obliged him because that's what he wanted. In this one, there's clearly moments where she's like, I wanted to try to create you. That is a weird take, and I kind of feel like they're really doubling down on this, like, the one thing, because, like, there are many moments where people tell Paul, like, oh, you're the one, or he even says it, where it's like, what is this thing of the one?
I saw you're pregnant, like, you're pregnant, you know, all those moments like that, I think, are...
That was really cool. I just kind of, like, it's interesting that, like, I feel like they're being a little bit more forceful with the Muad'Dib line stuff.
Well, I think that's also something for the audience to grasp onto, and kind of that's familiar for the audience. I think a lot of the other political stuff makes a lot more sense if you were doing a series of Dune. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you could absorb week to week and get more familiar. I think the concept of the one is something that is kind of like a mass appeal sort of thing that a lot of people can understand, not just people that are super into deep sci-fi shit like that.
I want to give the floor to one Snowbike Mike, who is joining us audio only right now. Mike, we need to know. You watched Dune, of course, on your preferred screen, which is your iPhone. Did you fall asleep during Dune?
Nick Scarpino, thank you so much for inviting me onto the screencast today to join you, Andy and Kevin, to talk about this incredibly epic movie. And Nick, I am happy to report that I did watch this stunning movie, Andy Cortez, on my solid iPhone 12 Max. It was awesome.
Oh, the Max.
It was
good.
Astonishing. Okay. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better picture quality and experience. But I will say, I stayed up the whole entire time. Two and a half hours. I didn't blink. I didn't move. This movie grabbed me, and I loved every moment of it. I wish I could join the screencast and talk with you guys, but I'm hosting a stream. But I will say, the Mike Mini review, epic, awesome, cool tech, awesome characters, love interest with blue eyes. I mean, epic battles. What more do you want? It's so cool. Go watch it. Go check it out. And, of course, hang out with these three.
Hell yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Michael.
How'd it go?
I also want to point out, I love Stellan Skarsgård's performance.
I thought it was so good. Dude, that sound effect and terrifying. When the thing on his spine, like, get like so he can float.
When it activates.
It's so creepy.
Sound design of every shield activating is fantastic. The shields getting hit. I just love, like, that adds so much more to the tension in those moments when you're hearing it and you're seeing it turn red. I am so excited for part two to see more Javier Bardem and see how he gets. I'd assume that he will take on a pretty big role as part two begins. I also want to point out a question that I had for you all who kind of understand this world more than I do. Mm-hmm. When the hunter killer little flying drone, why does it stop? What?
So they have a force field on them. That thing that they randomly touch, like Vladimir or Harkonnen, you remember?
Yeah, they all have like personal force fields.
Yeah, right.
So
it
has to go through the force field, and a slow blade can pierce the force field. If it's going fast, it'll block it. So that's why it like always looks like it stops. It's still driving in. It's just slowing down.
I'm not sure why it stopped when it was trying to stab Timothy Chalamet, though, because I don't think he had his force field.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, yeah. Was it like not seeing him because of the hologram?
I think that was the point. It wasn't seeing him.
It's moments like that that I think kind of just add unneeded confusion, where I think, like, Denny, like, you can be as sort of bombastic as you want with these wild scenes and kind of, like, go for really... like, this is going to challenge you mentally right here, Andy. I'm like, fuck, I'm trying to understand. This is so confusing, but I'm loving it. It's moments like that. It's like, that's kind of an unnecessary moment. It just adds more complexity to it. And I feel like I shouldn't have to ask that question afterwards. If it was just a moment where he's watching and it comes after him and then, like, super fast speed, he's able to do it, really cool. But I don't know why it stopped on his eyeball. It was a little confusing, right?
Yeah. That is one of those things. Like, I agree. That part was a touch confusing for me as well. Go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, I was just going to say, it's interesting that, like, there are three, like, weird space factions, and they showed the navigators very briefly when they're going to, like, sign the treaty.
Yeah.
And their design is so fucking cool. They have those helmets on. And they're
dome
full of spice inside of it. That is awesome. It's very different than what we've seen before. Also, it might not be the actual navigators, but I just wanted to touch on that because it's fucking wild.
Here's a question I have for Andy. Andy, you didn't read the source material. What is your perception of what the spice is and does?
I mean, the spice is like oil on Earth. Like, it is. It has more properties. It is. It makes you fucking high if you haven't been exposed to it. You get blue eyes from it if you're around it all the time, like the Fremens do.
Right.
But from what I understood, they get to Arrakis, and the people on Arrakis are trying to unlock all the water that's in the planet, and then they discover the spice, and that just sort of, like, changed the whole trajectory of what Arrakis was going to be.
Right.
It was going to be this paradise, and they realized spice is where it's at because all the big factions want it because it's super important for interstellar travel. And that's, like, the big important thing about it.
Yeah, that's the important thing. Good. Okay, good. I'm glad that came across to people because that was one of those situations where I remember reading the book being like, I'm a little lost as to what this thing does. And, like, I think that it does a lot of different things. Yeah.
It's like vibranium. Like, it feels like it's more than that, though,
because it's one of the things that, like, starts to unlock Paul's powers and it's a weird kind of, like, nebulous thing.
On top of the fact that, like, you can use it. So basically, it gives you, what do they call it? Precedence? prison. It gives you like you can see the future,
but
it's something like that. So you can see the future a little bit.
That's what the navigators use.
So the navigators use it to, in this universe, the fast and light traveling is that they fold space, and the only way to do it safely, like the only way to calculate the routes, is to have a bunch of spice in you. But it also extends human life to like something like 30% more. So people do spice. And then if you do it too much, it kind of kills you.
Got it.
So it's got all these crazy properties that like the only place in all of the galaxy, I don't know if it's universe, I think it's
I think it's the universe. I think that's why Arrakis is so important.
Yeah. That has spice is Arrakis.
Yeah.
Man, I am so sad that Oscar Isaac is dead because he, like,
sorry, man.
Everything he fucking touches, every line this dude delivers is perfect. He is, like, in my opinion, probably one of the better actors acting right now in Hollywood. Yeah, like, every line he delivers is so perfect and it never feels fake or forced. And there's never been a moment with him that I go, oh, that didn't really sound great. Right. But there is with other actors like Chalamet, like Jason Momoa, that you have those moments. I just love everything about Oscar Isaac. I want to circle back just really, really quick because I know we were running a bit longer on this than we thought, but this movie's awesome.
That's fine, yeah.
The tech in this movie, like you were mentioning, Nick, I think it is I think it's like, let's dial the 15% back Denis Villeneuve of it. Like, I think it's the aesthetics of it. When we watch Arrival, I love how unconventional this UFO ship looks. It is so weird looking.
Looks like a dark chocolate covered almond.
It looks like nothing, right? It's like something we've never seen before. I think in this one, there are a couple of those flyby moments. That we're used to seeing planet with a ship flying by, and it's we're in space, and there's that cool A-wing, and here's the cool X-wing, you know, like we're kind of used to that sort of thing. But when you see just something that looks like a Cialis pill or something, like it just feels weird. It doesn't have that same sort of effect. And there's a couple ships, like I like Momoa's ships look badass. The Dragonfly ones look fucking
Dragonfly
rad.
Dragonfly ones are sick.
I don't understand the ships of these PMCs that come in that the Harkonnen hire.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like little pods, and when they land, they kind of like expand. And I am assuming that's for a slower landing.
Like to slow it down, yeah.
Wait.
The drop ships what's the name of the dudes with the. And all white that have
the ones that were hired. The ones that were hired by the Harkonnen.
Sarkonnens, yeah.
Sarkonnens, something
Sarkate.
Like that.
Sorry, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, those ships too. They just look weird, and like I want the vibes of like I want the sort of visual identity of damn, that's a TIE fighter, and that, you know, like that's the sort of shit that I was looking for. We don't need to go all the way. Like, I'm not asking for anything to be super angular and kind of conventional sci-fi. I love how weird Denny is with his visual language, but there's like just tone it back a tiny bit. Let's get a little bit more. Toy friendly.
Right. But I will say, like, I'm conflicted on this, right? Because I totally agree with you. And again, I think if that would have gone, I think defining the tech in a lot of these, in a lot of the different houses would have gone a little bit farther for me to like distinguish them visually. Granted, it would have all gone out the window when they went to Arrakis, because that was kind of, a meld of all these houses that had taken over the years.
Yeah.
But I do think that, like, it's interesting because when you say the tech in this movie, there is no tech in this movie. Did you see a computer ever? Like, the only piece of tech that we ever see is he has that little tiny projector that he uses. Everything else, this thing is – there's no control except for that little tiny thing they have back here.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I also love that they have, like – different marks for different people, like what they do in the world. So the guy that's like the consigliere has that little
line.
He has that little thing on the line on his lip. Mm. And then the guy that's the doctor has the diamond. I'm like, that stuff is super cool.
That's why it felt weird to me, Nick, when you mentioned that there's no tech. No wonder why it felt so out of place when he gets in the Dragonfly ship, Timothy Chalamet, and then proceeds to control the ship the way Luke would control an X-Wing and go click, 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 and hits all the switches. Yeah. And it felt like, damn, we haven't seen any of that in this whole world.
It's very weird.
It's interesting they didn't explain that further. Because, like, I don't think that's anything spoilerly. I'm shocked that it didn't start with, like, a speech that talks about all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, again, I think that that's... You have to skate that line between, like, over exposition and just letting the audience be in the world and figure this shit out for themselves.
Yeah, but like,
it's funny though because like that cockpit feels super low tech because he had like radar and shit on it that looked like it was like blurred out. I'm like, this is kind of weird.
I'm so excited to watch this movie with my dad when I go back home for Christmas.
I'm gonna watch it again this week.
Big old screen sound. Yeah, I'm so stoked.
Final thoughts, gentlemen. Any closing thoughts on this before we wrap this Dune review up?
Go watch it, please. I want to continue to see Denis's vision throughout the rest of this sort of trilogy. I think it's special. It's amazing to watch, and it is one of those spectacles that I think deserves a theater viewing. Double mask up, get vaxxed.
Wait, real quick. Have they said it's going to be a trilogy?
That I don't know.
I thought it was.
I don't know if it's going to be part one and part two.
I think it's part one and part two for Dune.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Dune movies. I really hope that we get the three books out, because the books after that, they're too much. I doubt they'll ever
get beyond the first book.
Dune Messiah is fucking wild, though.
So as like, of 23 really... hours ago, the report inverse is Dune Part 2 release date trailer. So there is a Part 2 coming. Dune Part 2.
Oh, I don't know why I was under the assumption it was a trilogy the whole time.
I think I said trilogy earlier today, but I think it's going to be Part 1 and Part 2. And Warner Brothers, I think, is committed to Part 2 as of right now. So that is huge.
I feel like if we get any, like, if Denny gets his way, I would imagine we'd get 6 movies total and then, like, a really weird TV show.
Shout out to David Dasmalkian. David Dasmalkian. The guy, just shout out to him, the skinny, bald dude, the Harkonnen from...
Yeah. Oh, the guy that's from Ant-Man?
Yeah, from Ant-Man and from Suicide Squad, Polka Dot Man.
He's
so good. Like, yeah, when he died,
I was legitimately upset.
Me too.
Because that tooth thing, too, is so much cool. Of this world is so rad.
I mean, even the visual of Oscar Isaac, just like they have him naked on the chair, paralyzed. So fucked up. Ah, all of this is so good. Ladies and gentlemen, that's been your Dune in review. Let us know what you thought about Dune in the comments below. Please keep it spoiler free for everyone, at least for the first few weeks, because we don't want to. We don't want spoilers in this.
I don't know.
I don't know that you can.
Not with as far as we've gotten.
You could spoil deaths.
I mean, yeah.
Sure. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, the
just be cool.
Duke Leto death was kind of a big deal when I was like, oh, fuck, they fucking killed him. Anyway, let us know what you think in the comments below. Of course, if you're listening to this on podcast services, congratulations. Please make sure you subscribe to those podcast feeds and make sure you give us a little nice little rating over there if you can. A little 5 stars goes a long way. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, it's been our pleasure to serve you.